Okay, good evening, everybody. We just concluded the program next door in honor of Yom HaAtzmaut, and it was a very beautiful, a very meaningful program. And just to try and follow in that theme, I'd like to speak tonight about a little bit of the halacha that comes up when we talk about Eretz Yisrael. As we know, celebrating a milestone of this magnitude, of having Eretz Yisrael for the last 70 years, is something that should be a very special feeling for all of us. But at the same time, every time a person is entrusted with a gift, comes along with it a great and tremendous responsibility. And part of the responsibility that we have today, Rav Kook writes about it in one of his letters very beautifully, how he thinks that this is being nichnas into the Kodesh HaKadashim, when he got the Rabbanut together in the early 1900s to try and configure a number of laws together of how the country would be run al pi halacha. Now, obviously, we don't yet have everything exactly the way we would like it to be, but to have a new country and a government run based on the way the halacha expects it to is a tremendous challenge, because we really don't have a lot of precedent. We don't have a lot of Sifrei HaAchronim and Rishonim who discuss the issues that we are faced with today. And as we know, this is something that poses a very difficult challenge. It's a very exhilarating one. It's one that we're very happy about, but it's a very difficult one because we really need great Gedolim of our generation to try and figure out how we are going to pave the path for the new questions that we are being faced with in our generation. So I'd just like to go, in honor of this evening, to go through a tshuva here. It's not a complicated one. Obviously, there are many, many questions that come up in running our own government, and we don't have time to get into so many of them. But I feel that often when people speak about this issue, they choose topics that are so irrelevant to the layman. They talk about some of the issues that will never come up in our lives. You know, we're not running the government, we're not in a position of power, we're not in a position of leadership, so I didn't really want to talk about a meaningless issue, just lahagdil Torah lahadira. What I chose here is an issue that is relevant to all of us in different junctures of our own lives, but it is something that is written about with regard to chayalim in Eretz Yisrael, which obviously poses a tremendous challenge in many different things that they are asked and expected to do. As I said a couple of weeks ago in a chumashi here on Shabbos morning, I remember a couple of years ago there was a chayal who was a chayal bodeid. He was an American who was serving time in the Israeli Defense Force, and he was sending me emails that he used to listen to my shiurim while he was on his duty. And I was always wondering, you know, maybe it's better that you shut off your cell phone and stop listening to the shiur, and maybe you should get back to what you're doing. He's a wonderful guy and an amazing chayal, obviously, and he was able to, I guess, do many things at the same time, and he was able to, you know, compartmentalize the part of his training that he had to worry about and the part of his learning that he had to worry about, and he used to send emails every so often with questions. And I remember one time, on one occasion, Parshas Pinchas, I gave a short shiur about whether or not a Kohen who is Haragas HaNefesh is allowed to duchen. The Gemara says a Kohen who is responsible for murder is not allowed to be Nosei Eskapav. He's not allowed to be involved in the mitzvah Birchas Kohanim. So the question is that only when a Kohen shaharges hanefesh in the regular course of life, either b'shogig or b'mezid, or is that even when a Kohen harges hanefesh b'makom mitzvah, when you have a Kohen who's involved in fighting a melchemes mitzvah, would he also be disqualified from being involved, being engaged in the Birchas Kohanim? If you hear from Mariv, Mariv is in the main shul next door. So, but we welcome you anyway. Thank you for joining us. So, it's okay. You're always welcome back. So the question that many contemporary Svarim raised was, should we assume that a Kohen Shaharges HaNefesh today, when you have Kohanim who are drafted into the Israeli army, and every once in a while they have to be involved in the act of murder, as much as it pains them, but that's what you have to do as a soldier. So when a Kohen is responsible for the act of murder, is he then disqualified from Birchas Kohanim? And it's not like in America where we only have the Shaila Shalosh Pamim Bashana, when we have duchening on the Shalosh Regalim. There in Eretz Yisrael, it's going to be a tremendous consequence. If you disqualify him from Birchas Kohanim, he's out for the duration of his life every day. And that's a very painful thing for a Kohen to hear, certainly living in Eretz Yisrael when they duchen every day of the year. So I was talking about the various perspectives on this issue, where Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion against almost all of the Achronim of his generation, but Rav Soloveitchik felt that we assume the rule would apply equally to someone who is horeg b'makom mitzvah, as someone who is horeg just stam b'makom harashus. And Rav Soloveitchik felt that it wouldn't make a difference whether or not he killed because he was a soldier and that's what his job is to do, or whether or not he killed for any other reason, we would assume that he is disqualified. That was his opinion. That was what he felt. Many others disagreed. I believe Rav Moshe disagreed. And Rav Avadi Yosef has a long tshuva where he disagrees. And many other contemporaries did not feel that his position was correct. He brought a proof from the Midrashim like that, that David HaMelech says he was not able to build the Beis HaMikdash because his hands were filled with blood. But what was David HaMelech engaged? Why were his hands filled with blood? Who did he murder? He was involved in Mechemes Mitzvah. He was trying to fight the wars in order that the Jewish people should have a greater destiny, in order that he should be the Melech. That was what was supposed to happen. And yet he was disqualified. So Rav Soloveitchik felt from there you see that even if a person has the right to kill, and even if a person is perhaps doing a mitzvah by killing, and you're doing something that you're expected to do, perhaps this halacha when it comes to Birchas Kohanim might be a little bit different. So anyway, this guy sends me an email, and I was so moved, I was so amazed. He tells me that he is a sniper in the Israeli army. And what do I know about snipers? The answer is absolutely nothing till I met this guy. And he tells me that every time you have a sniper who has to do his job, you have to have two people working in tandem. You have to have one person who pulls the trigger and the other one who's called the spotter. So the spotter has to set up everything and make sure that the target is exactly where they want it to be. And then the other one, I don't know what he's called, the shooter, I guess, actually does the act of shooting. So this guy sends me an email that he is a sharpshooter in the army, and he works in one of these two-team units. So he wants to know, what would Rav Soloveitchik have said about the spotter? Because the shooter can't kill without the spotter. So would Rav Soloveitchik say that they are equally responsible for the murder? Because in the end of the day, if not for the spotter, you wouldn't be able to have the success of the shooter. Or do you say, no, this is a special halacha that's with regard to the hands that actually did the act of murder. But the other individual who's involved. Now, these kinds of questions, I was so moved, and I told him afterward I would work on the question. I don't know. But he should go back to his job before I get back to him, and we'll figure out what to do afterward. But anyway, I think that it just shows how amazingly blessed we are to be living in a generation where these are the questions that we ask, and these are the questions that we have to deal with. And these are not questions that are easily figured out, because there is not so much literature over the last 1,500, 2,000 years which really deals with many of these very complicated issues. So here is an issue that came from a chayal. As we know, there are many chayalim that do very long shifts. And sometimes, let's say, I know when it was in the middle of Tzuk Eitan, there were chayalim who were doing shifts that were a week long, and they weren't going home for days on end, and they weren't going to sleep, and they would just get a little catnap over here and over there. And it was a very difficult time. So here, a shayla was presented as follows. Bidvar ha-chayalim, you can look inside. Bidvar ha-chayalim shahayu kol shos halayla b'ma'aravim. They were in a very intense battle. B'siurim v'shar pi'ilot mivtza'it. That everybody was involved in some sort of engagement with the enemy. V'chozrim lebasis, and now finally they get back to the base. Very late at night. Kishar lefnei alos ha-shachar. They get back, let's say, 5 o'clock in the morning, and alos ha-shachar is not going to be until 7 o'clock in the morning, let's say. Hayim utar lahem laleches lishon b'tikva sheyakumu lekro kriya shma bizmana. This guy hasn't slept in at least 24 hours, perhaps more. And he's emotionally drained, and he is physically drained, and he is exhausted, and he doesn't know how he's going to make it through the day. But the question is, well, it's almost alos ha-shachar, which means I'm very close to the time when I have a chiyuv to say kriya shma and to daven shmona esrei. What am I going to do? If I don't sleep, maybe it will affect my duty that I have to do the next day. If I do sleep, maybe I'll be mevatel the mitzvah saseh of kriya shma that we have an obligation to say every day as Jews. So this is the question that the chayalim posed to Rav Asher Weiss. Hayim utar lahem lalechet lishon b'tikva, and they're going to assume sheyakumu lekro kriya shma bizmana. They're assuming that we're going to set an alarm and we'll be able to wake up by the time that we're supposed to. Or Shema kiven sheyesh chashash shemeirov ayifut lo yatzlichu leorer asur lahem lishon klal. Look, you haven't slept in a long time. You're extremely exhausted. You're at wit's end, and there's no way you're going to wake up in 45 minutes from now to actually get up and daven. It's just not going to happen. You're so exhausted, you're going to ignore the alarm or press the snooze. That's going to be the end of it. So you already know from now that you're not going to be able to perform your mitzvah that's going to come a little bit later. What is my obligation, they asked, as a chayal? What is my obligation in terms of whether or not I'm allowed to go to sleep now, or do I have to wait an hour? And the reason why I think this is an interesting question is because it's not only something that is relevant to chayalim. We've all been in this situation where we have a mitzvah that we know is going to come in the near future, and we have all kinds of excuses to explain why it is that we want to defer or we want to just take a quick nap. And I think it's a relevant question. It's a relevant question. Do we have a right to take a nap? Sometimes you get home from a wedding and you know that there's an 11 o'clock Maariv in shul nowadays, and now there's no excuse not to daven with a minyan, but you know what? I'm so exhausted. I was in the office the whole day. I went to this wedding. All I wanted to do was stay at the chuppah, and I came home so late. I'm just going to take a half hour nap. We all know 5 hours later you wake up and there's no more minyan, no more davening. And the question is, do we have a right to do that? Do I have a right to say that right now I'm just doing what I think is the right thing and I assume that later on I'll be a responsible adult? Or should you assume that no, you have to already be concerned now for what might be the outcome later on? It's a very fascinating question that has far-reaching nafkaminas for many other areas of halacha as well, as we will see. I made a bracha on this right outside before I came in. So he writes as follows: B'she'elozu yesh ladon b'mabat klali uv'mabat prati. You have to break this down into two different discussions. Number one, you have to look at the individual circumstance. You have to figure out what, as an individual, do I have an obligation to do. Number two, he says, we have to look on a general scale. What is the halacha when we're talking about an army? What is the halacha when we're talking about a group of people that we need them to be at their best? We need them to be strong as they possibly can be. B'mabat klali. Hayim utelas al ha'adam chova lidok sheyuchal lekayim ha'mitzvah lefnei sheyahagia zman chiyuva. Number one, as an abstract question, do I have to worry about a mitzvah before the time of the mitzvah actually comes? There's a famous question that's raised by the Radvaz. I don't know why he doesn't mention it here in the tshuva. I shouldn't say I don't know why. I don't write volumes of shalos and tshuvas, so I don't really have the right to have an opinion. Were I to write a tshuva on this issue, I would have thought that the most obvious place to look is in the tshuva mentioned by the Radvaz, which is a very famous discussion that many, many, many Gedolim have spoken about in the past. The Radvaz, I believe, discusses about the man who was thrown in jail, and he's not able to perform any mitzvahs, and they tell him he has a right to get out for one day. He can either go out today, or he can save it to get out on another day. And he wants to know, should I go out today in order to put on tefillin? I'll have the opportunity, which is right now in front of me, to daven shacharis, to put on tefillin, to daven mincha, and then I'll come back. Or should I tell them I want to put it on reserve for another few weeks in order that I'll be able to fast on Yom Kippur, which is obviously a very important mitzvah and probably more consequential than the mitzvahs that I have in front of me today? So that was the question that was posed to the Radvaz. And you'll say it's a question in the abstract, but in the days of the Radvaz, in the days of the Rishonim, these kinds of questions were not abstract at all. There were many people who were thrown into jail for no good reason at all, and for some reason, somebody felt good one day and decided to let them out. And the question was a real question. Should I save my day off in order that I should be able to use it for something that is going to be more productive as far as mitzvahs are concerned? Or do you say no? The way the Rishonim say it is, Ein lecha ela mitzvah v'shaita. I have to do my mitzvah right now. What's going to happen later on will happen later on. And even though it might make more sense for me to wait later, you cannot rely on what's going to happen later. What I have right now in front of me is all I have to worry about, and I don't have to look into the future. So that is a general question that one needs to think about before a mitzvah comes into practice. You cannot say that 2 weeks before Yom Kippur, I'm already obligated to worry about Yom Kippur. So when does my obligation for Yom Kippur begin? What are you going to say? On Leil Yom Kippur, when I come to Kol Nidre? That's when it starts. It can't be. I have to prepare before Yom Kippur in order to enable myself to fast. So when does that obligation begin? The morning of Erev Yom Kippur?
Well, you have a concept of advance and davening in general, like the, what you can't do.
That's 100% correct. So the Gemara does talk about various different things that you're not allowed to do before davening every day. And the Gemara learns this in Sanhedrin from Losochlo al Adam. The Gemara says that we have many, many different interpretations to that pasuk. What does it mean, Losochlo al Adam? What does it mean you're not allowed to eat on the blood? So the Ramban says on Chumash, Losochlo al Adam means that they used to have a custom, they used to have a practice, that the Ovdei Avodah Zarah used to go around and have blood in a circle, and they used to eat the offerings, whatever it was, a sacrifice. So the Ramban says, that's what it means. You're not allowed to do like the Ovdei Avodah Zarah and sit around Kumbaya and have all the blood around you. That is too similar, that is too much a connection to the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and that is not a good idea. That, says the Ramban, is the pshat in the pasuk. And many different pshatim that the Gemara says, but one of them is, lo sochlu Kodem shetispalalu al dimchem. You're not allowed to eat before you go to daven. And some people do not know that this is the halacha. We're not allowed to eat breakfast in the morning. We're not allowed to take care of ourselves. To go to the gym in the morning is a very big shaila. You're allowed to go to the gym before you go out to daven. So some people say that when they work out and when they go to the gym, it's something that rejuvenates them. It's something that makes them feel much fresher and much more awake. Obviously, let's say sometimes people will take a shower before davening. Why? It's true, you're not supposed to groom yourself before you go out and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu and go and daven to him. But if taking a shower is going to make you feel more like a mensch, then obviously it's going to enable you to daven better. That's not the question. But if a person does things that are just for convenience sake, let's say you go to the supermarket before you go to daven because it's just easier that way. No one's up so early. No one wants to be there. So really, that's not the proper thing to do. Because before davening, we're not supposed to do anything else. Davening is supposed to be the first thing that we do every day. That is a halacha with regard to tefillah. However, the Gemara says, it is not limited to tefillah. We have this with regard to many other mitzvahs as well, that we're not allowed to engage in other activity. For example, we find it by Neres Chanukah, we find it by Leil HaSeder, we find it, the Shulchan Aruch says it, by Mikra Megillah. By all these cases and many more, we find the halacha is that we cannot be engaged in any other activity. We have to focus our attention on the mitzvah that is before us. But that is immediately before the mitzvah. That is, when I have an obligation to do bedikas chametz, when it's already the shkia outside, I'm not allowed to engage in any other activity. Here the question is, my chiyuv of kriya shma has not yet set in. I'm not yet obligated to start saying kriya shma because it's still the middle of the night. So do I have to worry now, 2 hours before the zman kriya shma sets in, do I have to worry that I'm not allowed to go to sleep now because maybe in 2 hours from now I'm not going to wake up and I'm going to forget to say Kriya Shema? That is the question. So it's a little bit different. It's similar, but it's a little bit different from the question that you mentioned. So let's see. Number one, do we have an obligation to worry in advance of a mitzvah before the time of the mitzvah sets in? Or number two, Shema ein la mitzvah ela makoma v'shaita. That is a terminology that is borrowed directly from the Rishonim. The Ramban, I think, or the Rana Maseches Shabbos, writes this with regard to a different concept entirely. Over there, Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara talks about, In the days of the Gemara, they were under the impression that after doing a bris milah, the only way that the child would get out of the procedure while remaining healthy would be if you would make sure to have hot water poured onto the baby after the incision was done. That was the practice. That's what the medical experts of the time had thought. And the question was, here we have a bris milah that takes place on Shabbos. And obviously on Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook up water. Correct? So the question is, obviously they have to set it up before Shabbos, put it on some heating system that it would be available for them when they should need it after the bris milah on Shabbos morning. The problem is, says the Gemara, Hahu Yanuka, the famous story went that there was a young child whose eighth day fell out to be on Shabbos, v'ishtape chamine, and the water spilled. So now we have a moel who's ready to go, we have all the guests here, we have the meal is ready, and the problem is we can't do the bris milah because we don't have the water that we need in order to be the antiseptic after we're done. So that was a major question. What is supposed to be done? Do you say, on the one hand, we should go ahead and do the bris milah, and then once the bris milah is done, the child is considered a chole, and for the purpose of a chole, you're allowed to go and cook up the water. You're allowed to be mechal Shabbos for any chole. That's a really life-threatening chole. And over here, it was assumed that a child who doesn't have this, his life is in tremendous jeopardy. His life is in danger. So that was, on the one hand, that was the assumption. Maybe we should say that we should deal with it right now. Ein lecha ela mitzvah v'shaita. Right in front of me here is the mitzvah of bris milah. What's going to happen afterward that I'm going to have to be mechal Shabbos? Too bad. Maybe my mitzvah that's in front of me is more important than anything else. Or do you say, no, you have to look at the overall perspective. What is going to happen if I do the bris milah? If I do the bris milah, then the consequence is going to be I'm going to have to be mechal Shabbos, and maybe you don't have a right to do that. This gets into a question that the Rishonim discuss as well. The Gemara tells us that you're not allowed to go on a boat trip within 3 days before Shabbos. The question is, why not? Not clear at all. The Rishonim have a major dispute about why one is not allowed to do that. Some Rishonim say, Mishum Oneg Shabbos. The first 3 days, you're going to be seasick, you're not going to be comfortable, you're going to be Mevatel Oneg Shabbos if you're on a boat. Doesn't really apply in our cruise ships today, where you're more comfortable there than you would be somewhere else. But that is the first opinion of the Rishonim. Second opinion of the Rishonim is maybe the reason why you're not allowed to go on a boat trip 3 days before Shabbos is because what? Because very often there's a problem at sea, And you're going to have to be Mechal Shabbos in order to work out whatever issue comes up. So obviously it's Pikuach Nefesh. Obviously it's people's lives are in danger. You would be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. But in advance of Shabbos, you have to already think about that. You cannot be involved in something 3 days before Shabbos when you know that when Shabbos comes, you might very well have to violate the Shabbos. So the Chasam Sofer was posed with the following question. Chasam Sofer wanted to know, what would the halacha be about a Kohen going to become a medical doctor? Should you say, it was not the same question that we have today. It's not today the question is, how does he get through medical school? He has to deal with cadavers. So obviously you have a question from the get-go, you have a problem. But in the days of the Chasam Sofer, he wasn't even dealing with that. Chasam Sofer wants to know, can a Kohen go to medical school? Later on in his life, he's going to have to treat patients who are terminally ill, and he's going to be metame himself. So how can he do such a thing? So says the Chasam Sofer, somebody argued and said, maybe it should be allowed, because after all, when the time comes, you're dealing with a chola sheyesh basakana, and we would allow somebody to violate any aveira for a chola sheyesh basakana. So the Chasam Sofer was asked this question. Writes the Chasam Sofer, you're telling me, it's true, if you have somebody drowning in the water, that's a chola sheyesh basakana. If you have something in front of you, you have to drop everything else and take care of the problem, make sure the person's life is not in danger. However, says the Chasam Sofer, you're going to tell me that I have to go now to medical school and I have a right to go to medical school in order that later on I should be able to be involved in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. He says, what right do you have to be involved now? We have other doctors around. So you're putting yourself in a situation where you know you're going to have to violate the halacha. And the Magen Avraham, and the Chasam Sofer there draws a parallel to our halacha by Hilchos Shabbos. And he says, does a person not have to think about Shabbos before Shabbos comes in? Of course one has to. Similar to what the Magen Avraham writes. Magen Avraham has a startling comment, I think we've spoken about it in the past, where he quotes the Sefer Hasidim. Magen Avraham writes there, and the Mishneh Berurah quotes it lahalacha as well, that when a woman comes close to having her due date, when a woman thinks that she's coming close to having the baby, she has to do whatever it is that is possible to make sure that the child will not be born on Shabbos in order that she won't have to be Mechal Shabbos. So obviously, if she goes into labor, so you go to the hospital, there's no two ways about it. However, he says, you should take whatever precautionary measures you possibly can to make sure that you're as close to the hospital as possible and that you limit the amount of Chilul Shabbos. It's true, if it should happen, you have to be Mechal Shabbos, but says the Magen Avraham, one should try as best as they possibly can to limit the amount of Chilul Shabbos that they will be involved in. Is it really only 10 minutes left? We're in the first paragraph. I don't know. Nothing ever seems to work out the way we want it to. So anyway, these are all very important questions with regard to various areas of halacha. How much in advance of a mitzvah does a person have to worry about the mitzvah? And how much do we have the right to say, when the time comes, we will worry about it, and that is not an issue that we have to deal with right now. That Magen Avraham, where he quotes the Sefer Hasidim, by the way, so the widely debated issue is whether or not the woman really has to go to be near the hospital before her due date, or perhaps not. Does she have to worry about it or not? That is a very interesting issue. However, what the Magen Avraham also says, which nobody knows about, is that the Sefer Hasidim writes that the Hasidim Anshei Maisi used to actually daven that they shouldn't have children during the ninth month, and he says they would be mishamish mitoseyem on certain nights of the week in order that their wives won't give birth on a Leil Shabbos. Now, it doesn't always work that way, as far as I understand. I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think it works that way, that whatever day she became pregnant, I don't know that that's so clear that a certain amount of days later it's so definitive that she's going to actually have the baby. I don't think that's the case. But the Magen Avraham writes that that's what the Hasidim Anshei Maisi used to do. They used to only be mishamish mitoseyem on certain days of the week in order to make sure that their wives won't violate Shabbos when the baby is born. So, this is a widely discussed issue that comes up in many different places. Ve'af, third line. Ve'af to pasha da'la adam liknos lulav v'livnos sukkah v'lefos matzos mitzvah lefnehi giyachag. He says, how can you even ask such a question? You're telling me you're not sure whether or not you have to worry about a mitzvah before it comes in? Don't you know, you have to buy matzahs before Yom Tov. What? Leil HaSeder comes around, now you're going to start knocking on the doors to ask, anybody bake matzah this year? And the first day of Sukkot comes around, you're going to start walking around the town to see? Obviously, you have an obligation to make sure that before Sukkot comes in, you figure out how you're going to shake lulav. And before Rosh Hashanah comes, you have to make sure you have a shofar. And before Sukkot, you have to make sure you build a sukkah. So, isn't that the answer to our question? So he says, no. He says, that is the nature of those mitzvos. If you don't think about it before, there is no possibility for you to actually do the mitzvah when it will come. So the nature of the mitzvah of matzah, and the nature of the mitzvah of sukkah, and the nature of the mitzvah of dalet minim, and everything else is, you have to make sure that you think about it in advance. And if you don't think about it in advance, there's no possibility for you to do it. That's not a parallel to our case. When you're talking about Kriya Shema, which doesn't take any preparation in advance, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't expect of us to go to the mikvah before we say Kriya Shema, or he doesn't expect of us to do anything. You know the words by heart, you have an obligation every morning, every evening to say Kriya Shema. Doesn't require any advance planning. So, if that's the case, and it's in a different category of mitzvahs than sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzis, tefillin, everything else, do I have an obligation to actually be mindful of it before this man ha-mitzvah, or perhaps not? And I think this is an important question. Number two. Am I allowed to put myself in a position where I know that I will never be obligated to do a mitzvah? There are very easy loopholes that you can find. If you're smart enough, you can really figure out how to bypass a lot of mitzvahs. And you can get off easily and just say, I was an anus. I wasn't obligated. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who's a paramedic, and he very often misses tefillah b'tzibur. And he's very uncomfortable about it. And he told me that not sure if it's private, but he told me that he was I won't give away any descriptive details, but he said there was a emergency that came up, I think it was on a Shabbos morning, and he said that he went to the Rav of his community, and he knocked on his door early in the morning, and he told him, you know, there's an emergency, I think you should come and meet with his family, they're going through a very difficult time. And the Rav said, I got to go to shul, and I have to speak, and after shul, I'll come talk to the family. And he said, no, there's an emergency. So the rabbi said, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to help them medically. You want me to be supportive to them? Of course I'll be supportive to them. And I got to go down in a shul. And he came to me afterward. He said he was very torn. And he wasn't sure, am I right or is the rabbi right? He was not saying it in an arrogant way at all. He was just saying, what is the right way? I put myself in a position where I am now completely an anus. Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. There's no question about it. He was an osik b'mitzvah. He was certainly doing something that was very important, that was very imperative. But the question is, can you go through life getting used to that kind of lifestyle where you're just going to get off with calling yourself an anus? And that's a big question. Person goes to sleep. Do you call that person now an anus or a posheya? The Aruch HaShulchan discusses that, I believe. Somebody who goes to sleep and now sleeps through a mitzvah. Would you say that that person is called an anus? What do you mean? I'm sleeping. How can I be called responsible for something while I'm sleeping? How am I supposed to do it and know any better? On the other hand, writes the Aruch HaShulchan, maybe you're a posheya. You know that you're a deep sleeper. You know you're not going to wake up. So you're a posheya. That's your fault. You can't just get off on the taina of onus. So that is the question here. Oshema kolodo higiyaz man ha-mitzvah velochala lov chiyuva mishale chulu fidarko v'mivata lacharkach mitzvah machmas onso halo onus rachman ha-patri. V'yesh lodem b'she'el hazu gam behisyachsus pratit halo b'mesech ha-shabbos mevuar. We are told in Mesech ha-shabbos daftes. Dei nechnasan l'suda, you're not allowed to start an elaborate meal. V'lo l'saper, and you're not allowed to go for a haircut. Samach l'mincha v'chein hu b'shulchan aruch simen reish lamed beis. Yesh la'ayin. So the Gemara gives a whole bunch of examples. You can't go to the barber, and you're not allowed to start an elaborate meal, a whole bunch of things. However, the Gemara does not talk about the most obvious example. What if I want to go take a nap? Am I allowed to go and take a nap before I engage in the mitzvah that I know is going to come shortly? And that is something that he's going to discuss here. Obviously, we didn't have a chance to go through it. But I think it's an interesting question. It's something to think about in general, because it does come up in our own lives. It is something that we do confront every so often. You have it here if you want to go through it, or